This podcast is brought to you by BetRivers. Download the BetRivers app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Must be 21. Available in Ohio only. Void where prohibited. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports gaming is provided in partnership with Dayton Real Estate Ventures, LLC, DBA, Hollywood Gaming at Dayton Raceway.
If you're a tennis fan, you'll love Betting Weekly Game Bet Match on the BetRivers Network. Whether you're a bettor or just love tennis, you'll enjoy the in-depth analysis each week of the tennis calendar. Subscribe to Game Bet Match today from your favorite podcast provider.
Hey guys, it's Brittany Payton, and thanks for checking out another episode of The Sweet Life right here on the BetRivers Network.
Well, we're going to get right into it, and I want to welcome everyone into another episode of The Sweet Life right here with the BetRivers Network. Today, I am so excited to have an NFL legend with me, six-time Pro Bowler, Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year, Super Bowl champ, Hall of Famer, Jerome the Bus Bettis. Jerome, thank you so much for joining me. I am so excited to get a chance to have this conversation with you today.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. I do.
Well, I guess first I have to welcome you to the BetRivers family because you are actually a full part of the team now.
Yes, I'm excited to see where this goes and the opportunities. But it's been a great relationship so far. I've had a blast.
How has it been kind of entering this world for you? Because you've got all kinds of stuff on your plate. You're a businessman, you've played your career, but what is it like being on this side with BetRivers, kind of the whole sports betting thing, which really, you know, everyone kind of betted offline and this, things and that. But now that it's such a big part of the NFL and sports in general, where you actually see, you know, betting facilities inside stadiums, where when you were playing, you know, all that was so taboo in a way. So what is it like kind of entering into that world?
You know what? It's totally different. Obviously, it was taboo when I was playing, and I didn't have a great understanding of lines and over and under and parlays and all of that kind of stuff. Because, you know, obviously it was a big no-no. So now, you know, being out of football for so long and being in the position where I've come to learn more about that, to have the opportunity to work with BetRivers, it's been pretty unique in that I used to always kind of handicap games with my friends, and you know, we had fun with it, just trying to figure out how good we could be. And it's so hard, right? And so now having a platform where, you know, I do a show and they sponsor and they ask me to pick all these games every week and we have to use the line and all that. So it brings an added element, of a decision that you got to make about teams. And so you use a lot more information. So I find myself doing a lot more research about games now than I ever used to. I always just figure out, well, who's home, who's away. And it was always kind of really simple. Now it's a lot more that goes into it because it is a big business now, as we've all found out. And so getting and giving the best information is always key.
Yeah. And it's great because, I mean, having played, you get the lines, you have all the numbers, and then you just have that own personal insight, you know, because you've been there, you've been in that position. So seeing that, but I'm still trying to figure it all out when it comes to that stuff. But you really had just an amazing career. When I said NFL legend, that is truly the case. 13 seasons, mostly with the Pittsburgh Steelers, one of the oldest and most storied franchises, you know, in NFL history. What does that team and that organization and the city of Pittsburgh mean to you?
You know, it means so much because, you know, that's where my career kind of took the next step. I had some good years in with the Rams. And as soon as I got to Pittsburgh, the career kind of went into overdrive. And that was based on a couple of reasons. One, obviously, it was a good team. But the ownership, the franchise, everything was first class in terms of how they conducted themselves. and their expectations from the players as well. So it was just a great relationship, if you will. Me going to Pittsburgh, they love big running backs. I was a big back, so it was just kind of like that marriage on the field. But off the field, it was very special because they felt that the community was a part of this group that we're on. And it wasn't just owner-player. It was owner-player community. And mm-hmm. so if you understand that, then you became a part of it, and it became a part of you. And so it was a great relationship. I had some of my best years there and got a chance to experience a lot more than just the football side. The off-the-field side became a big part of it, and I think that's part of what allowed me to win the Walter Payton Man of the Award was being in Pittsburgh, being in a community that appreciated the things that we did individually to help the young kids in that area, in that community.
Yeah. And speaking of that, you know, this is this time of year, we're about to, I really look at as the Walter Payton Man of the Year is really as this kind of special fraternity, you know, of just these, you're among this group of such amazing men who, again, are giving back to their community, doing work, changing lives, doing amazing things on the field, but really showing just their character and who they are, which to me is the most important part. That's where, how kind of I judge guys based off that and that character. But what did that award really mean to you? And just kind of what do you think of these young guys now today? We have 32 nominees this mm-hmm. year, and one more, you know, a week from now is going to be entering into that fraternity to put their name alongside names like you and the guys that have come before them. So what does that award and how it's kind of even changed and grown from when you won it to where it is and kind of the platform it has today?
Yeah. And so when I won the award, you know, obviously it was large in stature, but it's even grown leaps and bounds since then. I think it's the one award, if there was any to win, that a player would want to win. Right. Because it doesn't talk about stats, doesn't talk about, you know, games played. It's about lives changed. And if you can put it in that context, then it's bigger than football. It's bigger than sports. And so the award is, I think, it's an award, but it's not your typical award, because what this award does, it shines a spotlight not on your career. It shines a spotlight on the things that you are doing for others and the communities that you're impacting, the lives that you're trying to change, the trajectory of the kids that you're trying to create a pathway for. And so I just think it's so important that we recognize that and we see that. And this award just kind of shines a bright light on the things, the wonderful things that all these men are doing. And then it's able to really zero in on that one person who exemplifies everything that your father stood for as a man. And so I think it's an incredible award. And it's clear, it's definitely the best award that I ever received in my career.
Well, that means a lot. That really means a lot. What some big news that happened this week, obviously, is just yesterday, Tom Brady, you know, announcing his retirement. And I remember when you announced your retirement right before Super Bowl in Detroit, that you guys went out, you won. I feel like you kind of like, what a way to go out in style right there. You know, you announce it, you go out, you win the game. It's like, drop the mic. I'm out. Peace. But I know that that's such a, you know, a lot has been talked about just the past couple of days about Brady and you name it. And I know even for my own father, it's such a hard decision to come to and make. So how did you personally know that it was just the time, that you knew that this was the time for me to hang up my jersey and I'm ready to move on into other things?
Yeah, for me, it was pretty simple. My body was starting to fail me, and I was struggling to, you know, be productive on the field at the level that I felt I wanted to be. Now, there's one thing for them to say, oh, you're good, you know, But my philosophy is I want to be the best version of myself. And if I am not, if I'm a shell of the player that I used to be, then it's time for me to move on. And so my thoughts were the year before I retired was I was ready to retire. I was done. I didn't have much left. And they convinced me to come back for one more year. And so in me coming back that next year, it was something that initially I didn't want to do. I decided to come back. I played it and we won the championship. And I knew at that moment that physically I didn't have anything left and I was ready to go. And I was ready to really kind of turn the page on that career and kind of start a new chapter in my life. Mm-hmm. And so for most players, that is an extremely difficult thing to do because the love affair with the game is still there. And I tell people all the time, if you love the game, if you can still play it until your heart is content. And I think that's what we saw in Tom Brady. I think we saw him play it, leave the game and say, you know what? My heart is still there. And he came back and he wanted to play. And so I think now, you know, he can rest and say, you know what, I got it all out of me. I played as long as I could play. The love was still there. And now it's time for me to move on and start the next chapter of his life. And when that happens, the itch, the comeback is not there. But when you leave prematurely or not your own will, then you always are saying, what if? I could still play, and so you still want more, and I'm just glad to see him end it. I think we all
finally, finally come to that conclusion. I know. Yeah. I was actually in the car today. They were talking on sports talk radio, and people were questioning, do you think he'll come back? What do you think's going to happen? Do you think he might still come back? I'm like, I don't think so, but you never know. But it seems like you're right. You know, that first time last year, realizing that, gosh, you know, my heart's still there. And then after this season and the way things may have went and maybe knowing, you know what? It's time. I'm ready to just kind of sit back, relax. He deserved it. He's earned it. So wishing him the best, but clearly, obviously, one of the best to ever play the game all around. So
one of the best outdoor.
Yeah. So switching back a little bit to your former team, to the Steelers, I wanted to just get your take on them, too, because their team is going through a transition phase themselves. You know, Big Ben retiring, year one in the books for Kenny Pickett, starting at cornerback. So how encouraged were you with the team and seeing the Steelers, especially the way they kind of finished off their season? They won 7 of their last 9. What do you see in that team and where they've come and where do you think they're kind of headed?
You know, it's great to see how they finished the season, because now you look at this team and you have a lot of optimism. You say the sky is the limit. If they can finish the way they did, then starting next season, you got to think that they're going to be a lot more confident in the group that they have. Obviously, Kenny Pickett, a young quarterback, the question marks, you know, are obviously going to still be there, but not so much, because we saw him develop in front of our own eyes. In the last, you know, 3 or 4 games, he had game-winning drives where he went down and took that team and won football games. And that's what you want to see from a young quarterback. A rookie quarterback, you want to see his ability to process, and the game is not too big for him. And you see him develop to the point where now you can lead a team in a pivotal moment of the game, go down, score a touchdown, win a football game. Those are the things that very few quarterbacks can do. And we've seen more than not is, you know, the failures of a lot of young quarterbacks. And the successes are very rare when you find them. And so what he is kind of shown us is that he is one of those players that we need to look at, get more information from, because this year could be a big year if, you know, his trajectory is in line with how it was at the end of last season. Yeah. I'm excited.
Yeah, if it continues on, you see, we saw the flashes, the bursts, and saying, yes. You know, those times it can be there. It's seeing, like you said, if that continues and having that consistency. Besides, yes. Obviously, that's going to be a question mark, the quarterback and watching Kenny and seeing how he develops, you know, in the offseason and then develops into the beginning of the year. But what do you think, besides that, the team really needs to focus on this offseason? What needs do you think they need to try and address?
Well, I just think they need to really look at the offensive line. I think that needs to be a strength. For the majority of the year, it was a weakness. And then latter part of the year, you know, the offensive line got significantly better. But I think they need to look at offensive line and then defensive line. I think, again, early in the year, the defensive line gave up a lot of rushing yards. In the latter part, they got substantially better. So I think the area of focus really needs to be offensive line, defensive line, and if you can get an impact linebacker, somebody who's really, you know, good against the run, but also can cover, because now this game has changed where it's more of a passing game. So you need mm-hmm. the defenders that can be kind of multidimensional, not just run stoppers, but the ability to stop the pass as well. So if they can find a linebacker that can do some of those things, that'd be great too.
Yeah. You said that's so true that, you know, the game now really is such a passing game and passing focused. How do you see that now? Because like when you played, my dad played, you know, running backs today, it's different. And what's expected out of them on the field is a lot different. I mean, I think it's probably clear to say that I don't see anyone ever reaching and hitting those records, those numbers, just because of the way the game is played, maybe in combined with passing and catching. But I don't think, you know, Emmitt's record is ever really going to come close to. I mean, you have guys like Frank Gore who played forever and they weren't even, you know, hit that mark. So how do you see that, kind of how the running back game has really changed and what we're seeing today on the field and what's expected out of these guys?
Yeah, it's much different. Now it's a pass first league. And now they're using all these metrics and numbers to kind of, justify the passing game and why you throw early, run late. But what I have seen is that when you look at the teams that play in the playoffs and teams that ultimately win the championship, all those teams have a running attack. And so I think, you know, a lot of it is, you know, they're looking at the numbers saying, hey, we need to be better throwing the football. We, you know, and the quarterbacks are throwing it more. But when it comes down to it, when you want to win a championship, you understand that you have to be able to run the football. So I think there's still a need for that running back. The difference is now teams are allocating their resources in terms of capital more in the wide receiver, quarterback, offensive line categories, and they're not focused so much on the running back position. So because of that, they're saying, you know what, we can go running back by committee sometimes. And if you do find a special running back, then you want to keep them. But that's harder and harder to find because colleges aren't producing the same type of running backs because they're not running the ball in college. So right. there's that effect of not enough quality running backs because, you know, kids in middle school and high school are saying, hey, there's no money playing running back. Let me play linebacker or something else. And so those really talented kids are starting to move away from running back, and it's creating a very difficult position in terms of how do you find that running back that can be successful in the NFL?
Well, kind of looking into, you know, speaking of that, looking into next week, you know, we've got Super Bowl 57. It's obviously a lot of the talk is, you know, Chiefs, Eagles. We have these two young, amazing quarterbacks that are just at the top of their game that'll be going against each other. But they both have great run offenses as well, too. So I want to get your analysis on next week. So what are you looking for and kind of your analysis on the two teams you've got going up against each other?
Well, I think the team that runs the football the best is going to win because they're going to be able to shorten the game. You got these quarterbacks, they're both really talented. But when you look at this game, if you shorten the game and you only allow, you know, 7-8 possessions in a game, each possession becomes that much more important. obviously Patrick Mahomes is a superstar, right? And Jalen Hurts, he's good. He's nowhere in the class of Mahomes just as a pure quarterback, right?
Right.
So, you know, the edge goes to Kansas City from that standpoint. But then when you factor in the ability that Jalen Hurts has to run and throw the football, now it brings in a totally different dynamic, one that he's really special at. So mm-hmm. I think the advantage then moves, slides a little bit more to Philly. So when I look at it, the one difference is you have the Eagles with the elite defense and Kansas City with a good defense. I think that's where the difference is. And I think because of that, I give the edge to the Eagles right now because I believe that defense is much, much more poised to stop Mahomes than a Kansas City defense is to stop Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, I agree. I it's when I kind of made my picks at the beginning of the playoffs, this is who I had in it. I had Kansas City and the Eagles, but I think you're right. It, you know, if you look at the quarterback matchup, Mahomes gets the edge, but how much does this injury come into play? Although what we saw over the weekend, I don't know. You could see he's still limping, but he's throwing for what, over 300 some yards. It's like, it still doesn't stop him. What can stop him? But yeah. When it comes down to it, I think Jalen Hurts' ability to be elusive and run the ball and not having, you know, a sprain, a high ankle sprain or something like that, he's going to be able to get around a lot quicker. Plus you have two running backs on that team by committee that can do it as well. So they're kind of keeping you in check, but I have the Eagles coming out on top on this.
Okay.
That's what I think too. I got the Eagles coming out. And if they do win, then hopefully I win some money too. We'll see. We'll see. I'm trying to win some money too, but I think they have the edge. It's also just want your take too, because this is a historic Super Bowl in the fact too, which is kind of crazy to believe that this is the first time we have two African American quarterbacks playing against each other in the Super Bowl. And it kind of seems like, wow, really? But when you look at it, that's the truth. That's the case. So what does that mean too, to see kind of where this game has come? Cause it's kind of crazy to think that Super Bowl 57, this is the first time that that has happened.
Well, I think it's showing the evolution of the game, and that position, because, you know, you go back, you know, 30, 40 years ago, that would have never been considered to have happened, right? Because there was the thought that maybe one, maybe two, maybe three African-American quarterbacks in the NFL. And to look now and to see the evolution of the position and how many African-American quarterbacks there are in the NFL. And then you look on the horizon. You look to see, okay, who's coming? And you also see there that there's an enormous amount of African-American quarterbacks that's on the rise. And I think it's a couple things. One, people aren't realizing is how good the defenses are getting, how fast these defenses are. Now you need a really athletic guy at the quarterback position because he's got to get out the way. He's got to mm-hmm. find a way to move around because these defensive ends and these outside linebackers are becoming faster and faster, and they can get after the quarterback much easier. And so it's creating a position that needs to evolve to be a little bit more elusive as well. And then the second part is the offenses now are saying, we want to use the quarterback position as a threat. And now how do you use them as a threat? Well, he's always been a threat to throw the football, but now we want to use him as a threat to run the football. So now all of a sudden, you've got to factor him into the run game, which, mm-hmm. you know, for as long as the game was played, it used to be a factor back when they only ran the football, you know, in the 30s and 40s. And then when the passing game came, it changed everything. And then the quarterback became the passer, not the runner. Well, now we're going back, and now he's a valuable piece of the running game. And so I think that's another reason we're starting to see African-Americans at the quarterback position more, because now we want a true threat at that position to run the football as well as throw the football. And so now the sky is the limit at that position. Now, I think this is the first, but it clearly will not be the last. It'll be the first of many, many more to come.
Yeah, it is. It's fun to see. I got to say, it's just so many great young guys. And I can just see all these guys, all these quarterbacks. Yeah. I mean, even last week's game between Mahomes and Burrow, and that being kind of and if you throw Allen in there in the mix, all those three, Herbert, I can see those becoming like, you know, the Manning and the Brady. We would see that at AFC Champion. Who's it going to be? Back ways. It's going to be a lot of competition with all these guys. And it's exciting to watch. That's for sure. I want to shift gears a little bit, because I just came to note and just doing some of my research before doing this interview that you actually went back to school last year.
I did.
You went back to Notre Dame and decided to finish your degree. Now, you've had a storied NFL career. You're a successful businessman. So why was that so important for you to go back and finish up and get that degree?
Well, one, because I made a promise to my mom and dad and that I would finish my degree when I decided to leave, you know, almost 28 years ago or whatever it was, to go to the NFL. And I wanted to complete that promise. My father was not here to see it, but my mom was there. She was the proudest, you know, in the world. And it was just a special moment that I was able to do that and present my mom with my diploma and my degree, rather. And so it was a special moment. But also, I've got two kids. I've got a 17-year-old daughter and a 15-year-old son. And I want them to understand that the education is the number one priority in my life, and it should be in their life. And so I want them to understand how significant it is, and that, you know, even all these years, I held it in such high regard that I wanted to go back and do it. And it was difficult. It was rough. You know, I had to get an apartment on campus, right off campus. And I was there, you know, it was just a difficult thing to do, because I literally had to be on campus going to classes. So they recognized that and realized how hard it was on dad. And so hopefully it gives them a better appreciation for what it means to be a college graduate. And I want them to aspire to be even better than me. So I had to kind of put up or shut up.
Well, you've got to tell you, so you got an apartment off campus, you're living there. What was it like being back on campus, but then being in class with a bunch of Gen Zers, which are younger than me? And
I mean,
I don't even understand Gen Z myself.
I was in school with my kids. Like, my daughter, you know, I couldn't believe it. I was just like, this is the worst, because, you know, I'm sitting there trying to take notes, and they're on the computers, and I'm like, I can't type that fast. So it was incredible to see the technology now that goes into going to school. And when I was in school, that was not even a consideration, right? So just to see everything is going, I was a dinosaur, really, there. But they were great with me. And the professors worked with me, because clearly I needed some work, you know, but I had tutors and all that, and just worked my butt off, because I knew how important it was. So I found a way to do it, but I tell you what, I wouldn't do it again. That's for sure.
Happy it's over. I feel you. There is nothing about college that I would want to go back and take another class for.
Nothing
that's
at
for
all.
Sure. Yeah, not definitely, but that is a huge accomplishment. So congratulations on that, because that is a big thing. And to go back all these years, and like you said, with all the new technology and all the Gen Zers and who knows what's going on, it's just a huge accomplishment. And continuing with Notre Dame, Marcus Freeman, his first year as head coach for the Fighting Irish, how would you rate his first year as coaching the team?
I thought he had a solid first year. I thought he did well. Obviously, he had some bumps in the road early in the season, and lost you know, a game or two that he probably shouldn't have. But when you look at what he was able to accomplish in his first year, first time as a head coach, you've got to give him a lot of credit because he took the challenge, kept motivating those guys, and then found a way to keep them highly motivated and going into the tough stretch of the season. They got some tough wins, beat a really good Clemson football team. And so I think he's got a lot to build on. You know, looks like he's got a top 10 recruiting class for next year. So I think he's on the roll. He's doing a great job, and he's a great person. I got a chance to spend some time with him when I was back. That was one of the silver linings, getting to know him. And he is a great person, great individual, and I think he's going to have a lot of success really soon.
Yeah. Well, it's exciting. I feel like a lot of excitement is within that program and what he's bringing to the team and the way they've rallied around him. So they are going to be fun to watch. Do you think do you see them as a school? Do you see them joining with all this new conference realignment and things like that? Do you see them joining, or do you see Notre Dame it being kind of a plus to kind of keep that independence?
Yeah, I think it's a plus to keep the independence. I think when you look at the landscape and when you look at the playoffs, they've already created a lane, if you will, for the University of Notre Dame to participate. And so now they are not forced to have to go, and it's only by choice. And I think it'd be difficult for the University of Notre Dame to choose to go to a conference when you've got to then now start splitting all the revenues that the school is getting because of football. I think they'd be going backwards to then do some of that when they have their own network in terms of football games and being able to televise them. So I think they have everything necessary that they need to exist and to coexist in this big, super conference world. I think they'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, I got to thank you so much. It's been a pleasure getting to talk to you taking the time to chat with me. Like I said, a true legend, a great man, and an honor. And it's been a lot of fun. So I want to thank you for that.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And hope to see you soon out in Arizona.
Definitely. Sounds good.
All right.